This is the Coaches Rising podcast, and today I am joined by Adam Klein, who is an executive coach and managing partner at New Ventures West. And we're going to be exploring today some work that Adam is birthing into the world that he's calling the Becoming Paradigm. He's writing a paper called On Becoming, A Metaphysics of Human Evolution. And, you know, I'm just a sucker for exploring these metaphysical ideas and, in most importantly, what their relevancy is and their practical application is for our work as coaches. So that's what we're going to explore today. What do we mean by becoming? What does it mean for coaches and how we see what transformation is and what the self is? And what moves can we make within the becoming paradigm? How does it contrast with paradigms such as the unfolding paradigm, which we've spoken a lot about on this podcast with Steve March? I find this fascinating. I love geeking out in this kind of territory. So let's dive right in. Here's the podcast with Adam Klein. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. All right, Adam, I'm glad to be with you. And maybe actually, to begin with, you could just say a little bit about who you are. Introduce yourself to the listeners, to the viewers.
Yeah, happy to do that. Oh, Adam Klein, I'm joining from Petaluma, California, which is just over the Golden Gate Bridge in Northern California. And I run New Ventures West now, myself and Sahar Azrabadi and Suzanne Kanig. We run New Ventures West, and I've been in this particular field of coaching for the last 16 years or something like that. And before that, was part of an intentional spiritual community and doing what we called like spiritual formation stuff, while also making life work as a consultant in the IT field. So these days I find myself running classes, coaching folks, writing a lot more lately. In fact, I just finished a cohort on Sunday, just 2 days ago, where we completed a new cohort of students. So immersed in the world of coaching and development and whatever all those words mean these days.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that, I think. So, yeah, we're going to talk about some writing you've shared with me, which I was excited to read. You were talking about becoming, and so we're going to unpack that. But before we get explicitly into what you mean by that, let's set a bit of context. So what do you see happening in the coaching field that led you to write this piece? And, sometimes we just write things because we're inspired, and it's not necessarily that we're influenced by what's happening in the field. But I wonder if there is a connection.
I think there's definitely a connection, and it's, for me, also connected to writing as a way of making sense of things that I felt like were internally stirring for me, and putting myself in a place where, okay, what would it be to express this, really helped start crystallize some things. And I think to say a little bit about like what were some of the like internal inklings, one of the pieces was, to me, it seems like there's sometimes a heavy emphasis on our conditioning and patterning and lots of attention going into that dimension of our human experience and being a human being, which is really fantastic and very super helpful. And I started to wonder, is this becoming a little bit too narrow? And what are other ways of understanding how we motion as human beings and become who we are? So started getting really curious about other orientations or other ways of viewing that, and looking at what are other, to say it this way, like metaphysical principles at play in our own becoming. But that was one of the key things, was what are other ways of understanding how we become other than let's undo patterns, to say it kind of in a simplistic way. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. So what do you think, what does it make possible to view the world through the lens of becoming? You know, you mentioned, it's common to see ourselves as, as conditioned or patterned, and maybe the work of coaching is integration. You know, that's a common way I talk about coaching. So
yeah,
how is becoming different, and what does it open up? What does it afford?
Yeah, I would probably say like three things are kind of where I'm at least anchoring these days. And the first is an orientation that there's a gravitational pull, we call it love, out ahead of us. Chardin talks about it as like an ab ante orientation, like what's in front, wooing us forward, as distinct from something being planted in the past that's growing and moving forward. So a different orientation in like, where's the locus of energy? Not just behind, but also in front. And then what is it, when we talk about like essence and true self and authenticity, an orientation of, is that something to discover or something that gets created? So I'm increasingly landing on it's something created rather than discovered. So it's not something underneath patterns, it's something that gets created through patterns. And then the final piece would be there's many ways to participate, and one of the, I think, most helpful and fundamental ways to participate is through self-emptying, or sometimes called kenosis or surrender. And that's a key fundamental way we can participate in our becoming. So those three things, which are really kind of woven together, they're not separate in any way, but are three handholds I've been wrestling with these days.
So if I contrast that with a way people might hold how we grow, which is, there's something in our essence and that unfolds, and we, the acorn into the oak tree, and, it's kind of moving from the past to the future. And in a sense, we become more of who we are. We don't self-empty. We're becoming, more and more of who we are through that process. And so it sounds like you're pointing to something, yeah, that I don't know if it transcends and includes, or it complements, or it contrasts.
I think it definitely includes, you know, there's clearly a biological aspect of who we are that has like epigenetics and genetic pieces to it, aspects to it that are orient in that direction. And we do have ways that we get our nervous system and stuff gets conditioned. But to me, that's like a piece of the puzzle rather than the whole thing. There's this other dimension of what is it to call in. The way I like to think about it is like calling in other ingredients or working with other ingredients in addition to some of these more biological or genetic aspects, which are also would also include kind of conditioning. And the other ingredients would be like, what is it to fuel or grow or expand or feed the soul part of us, which is a potential that can be attended to. But that's something that's like fed from the future in rather than from the past forward.
Before we unpack, you know, those different elements you just mentioned in a bit more detail, and we're going to talk about how it applies to coaching, what could you say a little bit more about what do you feel opens up with this view? Like, what does it make possible that the other view, you know, of us from the past unfolding, what does it make possible? Yeah.
Yeah. A few things that for me arise in this. One is the creative potential is more expansive because what we're working with is more vast. So now we're working with like the energetic field of love, which is widely expansive. And that's the majority of what to work with, is distinct from like, what are the things in my conditioning to let go of? So instead of just an undoing, there's an active creating. So to me, that's fundamentally different. We're actively creating rather than just undoing to discover. And that's a different orientation in and of itself that I think opens up a lot more.
Yeah. In a sense, you know, where the way I've talked about our process is like a via negativa. It's like you because I think it's interesting, as you speak, I'm just putting some pieces together that, you know, we've talked about the self-improvement paradigm on this podcast with people like Steve March.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in there, maybe we could say I'm actively creating myself, you know, I want to become a better person, you know, I want to be more of this. And then what I liked about, you know, we're naming these different kind of ways of like an unfolding way of coaching, which, or the paradoxical nature of change, which was like, the more I embrace just what's here right now without trying to change it and just include what's here, then there's a flow to experience, you know, and in a sense, like unfolding was less like, oh, there's something inside of me that unfolds to its potential, but more, yeah, my experience just begins to flow and become fluid. But it does feel like, parts of me that were around before or ways that I reacted habitually kind of lessened, you know, they went away and I found myself more free to respond. So there was a kind of via negativa. It's like you just kind of do that integrative work and then there's a kind of spontaneity liberated. But I'm hearing now, it's like almost like there's it's not going back to self-improvement, but it's like, no, I can participate in creation with reality in a different way.
Yeah, in a different way. I think, you know, one distinction I would make is in the self-improvement sort of orientation, if we think about that one that you brought in. In some ways, there's a helpful part about that. Like, it's really helpful to become more effective at helping other people. Of course, we could discuss like what that means, but that desire of like creating, being a person who can help others or being a person who can ease real tangible suffering in the world in some way, and being more skillful at that can be really wonderful. And it can also come from this place of like, for the sake of what am I wanting to improve? And I think this is where I would draw on like some of the early desert people who went into the desert, and they would say there's like three ways of knowing ourselves or three ways of being in the world. One is our instinctual drives, which we can become really encased in, and it's really just about our own survival and not really considering anything else. Then there's more like the intellectual knowledge, what I think we would today view as like the sort of more driven, optimizing, heavily left brain oriented. What's the strategy? How do we execute? And how do I optimize every dimension of my life, which is really rampant in our world? Kind of shows up in the phrase of best self. Like, how do I become the best of something? And there, I think there could be really stickiness in self-improvement and unhelpfulness because we're trying to maybe overcome a felt deficiency or wound or something. But then they would point to this third way, which is more leaning into the unknown. So you're wanting to become something that ushers in more love into the world, but you can't do it on your own. So you give yourself to this future gravitational pull or this thing that's out in front and say, this is my deepest longing, is to be love in the world. Help me create that. Help me create that kind of person in me. So it could sometimes maybe sound like self-improvement if we don't have these distinctions of what is it that we're offering into the soup and how are we participating in this creative process of becoming. So it's a surrendered participation. So there's a way that the self and ego-driven desires are let go of in the act of creation rather than the thing driving it.
Maybe actually we could talk about how this looks inside of a coaching conversation. As you share that, what I'm noticing is how, there's a kind of almost like devotional quality to our development. And I can relate to that in my own practice where it felt like, it was all about me, you know, and, the means of my own liberation is in my own hands. Right. And that was actually quite powerful for quite a long time. But at some point, I recognized it just felt incredibly limited or lonely or impoverished. And then this whole devotional aspect opened up in my practice, you know, praying, like, I can't do this without you.
Yeah.
Life.
Right.
And so much juiciness came back in, and a sense of flow. So, that's quite a spiritual domain to be in. How do you coach in this way? How does it influence your coaching when you start to, recognize some of these metaphysical kind of threads that you've named so far?
Well, one of the pieces that you named there, I think, is a really helpful one of like, what's the ultimate, I don't necessarily use the word devotion all the time, but the ultimate commitment. Like, what's the deepest thing that you're wanting to be about as a client in whatever circumstance it's in? And so that provides a helpful orientation to like lean into something larger than the particular moment. So helping clients orient to what are your deepest commitments. And what I mean by that is like things that you feel you would give all for. And, you know, depending on the person, that's going to have a very long spectrum of what those could be. It could be, you know, my deepest commitment is being a millionaire or whatever it might be, or helping my team succeed. Or often it comes back to family and taking care of people. So that helps as a starting place. Like, what is the thing to orient to that does feel like a way of giving some particularity to this sort of thing in the front that's calling us forward as a starting place? And then recognizing that there's probably things that are happening that are feeling like stickiness or blocks, like what we talked about, unhelpful patterns or whatnot. And sometimes then that's where it can, the coaching can locate, is like, okay, so let's massage these patterns out so something else is possible. And that's super helpful. I do some of that in my coaching. And then there's this other thing of, well, what is helpful? What would be helpful to call in, to say it that way, or to include, that would give generation to this kind of becoming? And in order to make room, you might have to let go of something to make space internally for this thing that you're long, that would be helpful to have room to start to weave its way into your system and create a new you, so to speak. So it becomes this process of empty and call in, empty and call in, empty and call in. So it's a shift in where we locate some of our attention and awareness, and how we help clients shift attention and awareness. And maybe the last thing I'll say is it also starts to soften having to land on any like really grounded sense of self. So not instead of like, how do I find solidity through some method, to how can I be comfortable without any ground to stand on, so that I don't feel like I have to hold on to anything, but I can really become completely empty.
Do you find your coaching clients find that appealing, that proposition?
Well, I think what, so, you know, depending on the person and their context, right, the language is really going to be dependent. So I'm talking kind of way more metaphysically than I would speak to most of my clients. But what does become helpful is understanding that grasping onto things ultimately isn't going to go anywhere. They get that. They get the transient nature of life, especially in corporations where things change so quickly that what was thing today and how to go about it is now different than it was yesterday. So that transience, that continual churn has become very familiar. So starting from that place of, okay, so that's true. There's this way in which the world, and if you just look at the outside news, like how things move so quickly, and we are wanting some way to find stability. So it's just changing a little bit the language of, well, what do we mean by stability? What do we mean by something that can help us feel buoyed throughout all of this? So in that language, it starts to make sense, especially when you draw on like very particular things that are happening in their life.
I mean, if we just stay with this. So, again, you know, this is like, I love these kind of conversations because it's helping me fine tune my orientation to this work. One of the things I've noticed in my life and, in my clients as well, is like, there's a way that two things happen, like one over time, that is as if their kind of structure becomes stronger. So it's my contradiction to what you're saying, but it's like, the things that used to bother them and trigger them don't anymore. There's more spaciousness, there's more presence, you know, and in my own life, a sense of presence and intimacy, interconnectedness, comes online more fully. And on the one hand, I can see how it's like that sense of presence and intimacy with life is actually really open to that sense of flow and change, and there's an aliveness inside of it. On the other hand, I would say it's like there's an identity shift where there's a kind of freedom that allows and I'm not, you know, I don't want to make any conclusive statements, so maybe this backs up your point, but it's around more than it was, where there's a freedom where the change is not as threatening as it used to be, you know? So there's a different kind of identity that's more comfortable in uncertainty. And I don't know how that tracks with what you're talking about. If you, maybe it's like, yeah, well, no, that's not really what we're talking about with the becoming move here. It's like a different kind of maturing or freedom or living.
Well, I love some of the things you said there. Like, spaciousness feels like a really helpful place to begin. I like the analogy of, you know, what helps calm the internal noise is making the room bigger. So if you have the same size speaker or the same amount of noise, and you enlarge the room, then it suddenly takes up less of the sort of sound volume in the room. So what is it to grow our internal sense of self so that the volume doesn't have to necessarily go down, but it sounds quieter? So yeah, that's a fantastic thing to help clients with. And then if you keep following that out to where there's now no more room, there is no room, then the sound itself goes quiet because there's nothing for it to bounce off of. And then inside of that, there's a great stability.
What's it like for you when, you know, I'm presuming you're playing around with coaching in this way. Is it, it's influencing the way you coach?
Definitely. Yeah.
So you've already named, you know, connecting to a sense of what we're most committed to, you know, what we feel, you know, deeply meaningful or is devotion, we're devoted to, you know, as something that could, you know, kind of tune us into that pull, that force that pulls us forward. And what else does it look like when you're coaching someone in this way? You know, they, maybe your client, as you might have, you, as you alluded to, they might not even know it, but what are you tracking? What are you doing? What kind of moves are you making in a session?
Well, one would be that we could build on this thing we were just on around spaciousness. So if someone's coming in and they're like gripped by an inner voice that often we'd label as like an inner critic voice, the thing that's kind of looping and criticizing and the internal judge, and people get really interlaced with that voice. They find it at once frustrating and at once like, well, if that were to go away, well, I wouldn't get anything done. So in that move, like, let's just find some spaciousness first. So voice aside, where is your attention? And so helping them retune where their locus of attention is. So that's that has to do with a little bit of me tracking where, what's my sense of where their awareness is primarily located, and seeing where else could it go that would have more space embedded in it. So not attending a lot to the voice itself. Like, they, that's a part of their internal psyche structure or whatever. Let's discover what else is here as one move, to see how they can experience a little bit more spaciousness from it. So that's a helpful thing to start with. Yeah, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, then, you know, I'm thinking of modalities where, so now they're not giving attention to that voice and they've connected to themselves, and, you know, maybe they're feeling like, oh, actually I feel kind of, you know, more present, or, you know, there's a capacity here in my body when I feel it that's different than that voice. And, you know, some modalities might be like, okay, that's really good, because now you can kind of start to attune to that sense of capacity, or, and it, you know, becomes more available the more you feel it. Where would you go from that point? You know, like, you've, I mean, or what do you, yeah, what do you think about what I'm saying?
Yeah. So keep going from that point of like continuing to shift their, I would call it sense of self. So what's their experience of self? that's helpful language rather than getting into something more abstract. So from this place now, what do they want to talk about? So first, it's just locating. Like, there's this thing that's getting all kinds of attention. It's kind of the squeaky wheel. And that's where the coaching starts. But then in this move of, like, what you're calling capacity, what I've named is, like, just a more spacious sense of self where other things are now available. That move alone starts to often surface something else that is wanting attention. So not just the capacity itself, but like what's really going on here that's wanting to be attended to. And depending on what's happening, you know, maybe there's some fear that's going on. So then what is it to get more intimate with fear? And not do anything with the fear, but be able to contact it and then release ourself from it. This is the sort of surrender, like let me empty the fear so that there's room for something else.
How do you do that? You know, like how do you release in that way without it becoming like, you know, the self-improvement like sense of, oh, I want to be rid of something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this gets into like the tricky territory of how to describe these things. So for me, what seems helpful is supporting contact with whatever this is. So intimacy. And the more intimate they become with whatever it is, the more they see and discover and experience. Maybe it's not what they thought at first. So that is one way of working with it, is just hold, quote unquote, holding space, you know, these vague terms we use, but being an invitation that I am here with you and whatever is also here with us is supporting you and contacting this. And there's a way that we're doing this, quote unquote, together. So the relational primacy is really important. Relationship with whatever it is they're contacting. And then seeing what arises as they contact it. Are there beliefs that show up? Are there physical constraints that show up? And to not do anything with any of what shows up, other than contact it and then let it go. So that's the emptying part. Contact and let go, contact and let go. And it looks different for each person because, you know, you're working with, well, I'm working with a different body mind each time. So the specific way of how that appears is going to be really connected to how this person currently understands themselves and the way they navigate their own internal space. So sometimes it could be more heavily visually oriented. Sometimes it could be more physically, like posture oriented, like shifting how they're actually holding themselves and doing different shaping. Sometimes it's more energetic. If people are attentive there in their own internal system. So it's really dependent on the person. But the contact and let go is maybe what I would say is sort of the essential thing there.
Yeah. And presumably then, you know, at some point in a session, there would be, you know, a shift. I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, in my own coaching, there can be a, you know, this similar process of, yeah, self-contact and kind of just letting it be, it's changing. And then there's a palpable shift in the way the client senses themselves. And that then the topic they brought in, you know, it's actually maybe the topic's not even there anymore. Or maybe they see new possibilities around that topic because they're seeing it from a very different place. And so I'm wondering where you kind of, you know, like, is there a kind of concluding point in this process in a session? You know, like, are you heading? I know you're not controlling where you go, but
Yeah. I mean, then it would be kind of, so what's your sense of who you are now? and what feels important from here? And then what do you want? What do you want? Who do you want to be? What do you want to happen? What do you want to create from this? So taking that, there's a life that this person is living with people in it and commitments and things that need attention. So from this way that you are now, what do you see as making sense? And then let's talk about what that looks like. And then we can talk through, oh yeah, so you want to have a conversation with your boss from this place. Let's talk about what that might look like for you. What do you see happening? Who do you want to be there? What's an orientation internally that will help you be in it the way you feel that would be most generative for all that's going on?
And I can imagine there's a kind of meta competency here that clients cultivate. So they can kind of start to get this way of being with their experience over time, doing it themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. Like looking for, what are signals to pay attention to that have you go back to or re-enter something that feels unhelpful, more contracted or whatever. So what are there sensations that start to show up that are signals or thoughts or whatever else that you can notice and have available as indicators of, oh, pay attention, something's changing in a way that I'm not wanting to move. So how can I contact it, let it go? Yeah. And then noticing that if there's specifically like the body part is really helpful, like noticing what's your posture? How's that going? What might you shift there? And the other part is, how are you, what's like your relationship with other people? How are you relating? Who are they? Have they changed into something else versus what you were originally orienting around? So yeah, there's ways of, I would say, paying attention to who they're being. And is this the kind of being they're wanting to live out in the world?
Yeah. And so one thing that reminds me of is when you said our essence emerges in conjunction with our existence.
Right.
As opposed to preceding our existence, you know. So, yeah, that seems to be taking root as an idea more. I think it's a really powerful sense of understanding of who we are, in that we co-arise with our experience rather than being something kind of independently existing somehow and separate, you know, atomized from, and but actually, yeah. Could you say more about why is that important? And yeah, again, like how you see that showing up. I think I hear you describing it in the way you're talking about how people relate to others and their experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not this. I don't know if this is necessarily a new thing. It's just I'm probably re-highlighting something that's been conflated in our world, which is our essence or true self, so to speak, isn't something to discover. So people will, like, sometimes clients or people coming into our classes at New Ventures West will say, I want to discover my true self. So then it can turn into like a, well, I'm in the mines chipping away at things to find something. And that pursuit, I feel like, could be shifted to, well, it's not something that you are finding. It's something that you're actively engaged in creating. So your essence is an emergent phenomenon, not a discovered phenomenon. Now, that can also be, though, a little bewildering, because it sometimes, to me at least, feels like, well, it's easier. It just feels more ground. If I just like keep going, I'm going to actually find something, versus something that feels a little less grounding. What do you mean? I'm just continually floating as this ever-emerging thing. Yeah. Kind of goes back to, where do we look for stability? So that's, and you're right, I think this is coming through a lot of like the language that shows up these days around like emergent stuff. And a really beneficial part of that is this way of orienting to being liberated from having to find anything.
Yeah. What I'm kind of tuning into is this kind of the tyranny of purpose, you know, that it's just a phrase a friend of mine used where, you know, the tyranny of true self. It's like, if I just keep working hard enough and, you know, contemplating enough, I'll finally discover who I'm meant to be and what my purpose is. And it can be a burden, such a burden. Whereas if you enjoy participating in life and orient to what you love and what you feel deeply committed to and passionate and curious about, then that reveals who you are in relationship to that thing. And it becomes much lighter or more enjoyable and enjoyable and lighter, I think, and can kind of remove some of that burden. So, and I think that kind of brings me to what you said about soul. I think you said soul at some point, and you know, my understanding of that has been, it is something that's actually, it's not a thing, you know, it's actually something that's a verb, and it's but I think I do fall into that trap sometimes of like, you know, the soul is something that's revealed as we do this integration, you know, and the patterns that I inherited that covered over the true self, you know, you know, are now free, and then soul can shine forth more fully. And I think this, you know, it works as a kind of analogy. And if I look at history, you know, I there's something that doesn't quite add up with that, which is there are people throughout history who showed up in what I would call an extraordinary acts of ensoulment, you know, soul force was just, there's something shone through that person and touched the world around them. And they were not engaged in any of that kind of chipping away before that to reveal it, in the sense of it wasn't a project for them. That's what I mean. I'm not denigrating what they'd been through in their lives to get to that point. So there's something about that that kind of speaks to me when you talk about, this view.
Yeah, absolutely. And that tyranny of purpose, that's a wonderful phrase. Yeah, so purpose then can become something we are, not something we have to do or discover. That just in our living our life is purpose in and of itself. There's nothing else beyond that for purpose. But you were saying something else that I wanted to touch on right here at the end. I lost it.
Well, it may come back, but just that, what you said there, purpose is something we are then. You know, so this is what I liked about, you know, an unfolding kind of view, which kind of put me, you know, desire is something that I am too. There's a non-dual aspect to it. It's like, I'm not separate from the thing I'm desiring. It's actually, you know, there's something deeply intimate. And so, as you talk about the becoming paradigm, I more and more just get this sense of being liberated from certain structures, which can feel, I think what you said earlier in our conversation, like very quite narrow, you know, and maybe can create a sense of heaviness and chipping away, whereas there is a kind of possibility to open right now to the purpose that we are, the sense of deep commitment that we are in this moment.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, what you're saying here, the way I would say it is fundamentally highlighting the co-creative way that we can be in the world. So our participation is really important. and we are active agents in creating. So to sense that aliveness and live with that aliveness of creating. And some of that is through surrender and some of that is through activity. But that there is a fundamental way that we are participating in the movement and motion toward love. So clearly we're not there yet, but we're on our way to being fully differentiated and fully unified. And we are key in that. And I think one of the things you were just talking about, I just remembered, is like, and what's can be really powerful is when we start the different orientation of like looking for something as distinct from how can I actively push into the boundaries of what I can see and say and touch, then it keeps flowing forward. So the more people, all of us, get in contact with what is happening for me and how can I touch it and articulate it in a way that feels really precise to my experience, then now things have moved. Because the boundary we thought was there, we've named it and now it's expanded out because it wasn't really a boundary in the first place. That's one of the, I mean, maybe that's core aspects of what I'm wanting to imbue is our active participation in creating.
Can you say more about that as well? Because, there's this thing now, the agentic sage. I think I'm getting that phrase right, but...
Say more about that phrase. I don't know what that is. Agentic sage.
So it's kind of become a meme and I think quite beautifully articulated and by some people, but this move of bringing together not just agency, that there are obviously very agentic people in the world who may be lacking wisdom in certain ways. And there are maybe you could call it wiser people, but who don't seem to have access to a certain kind of agency or power to impact the world. So what is it to bring those two together? And maybe there's a kind of neoliberal Western kind of elitism in that. Maybe it's true to say we all have a certain level of agentic wisdom, and that we can increase our capacity to it rather than some people don't have it. But anyway, I'm when you talk about co-creating with the world, I think this is one of the, that speaks to me of like, what is it to co-create with the world or in alignment with what we feel most committed to, what feels good, true, and beautiful. So how do you do that with someone?
Well, first one of the things I've been paying more attention to is what are the ways that I have preferences around what that means, co-creating. So for a while, I was really heavily bent on, well, it has to have some material way that it shows up. So there's this old song that said, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good, which I loved. I was like, yeah. And now I am wondering about that and wondering about in what ways are we limiting even what we mean by like being agentic and creating. So there are folks who are living on a hill by themselves in a small cluster, seemingly not doing anything for the world, but I think profoundly doing something for the world. So they are surrendered in a different kind of way and creating in a different kind of way and viewing it not in terms of what will my material body produce in the earthly realm, but what might come through the earthly realm if I surrender myself fully to this cosmic thing calling us forward. so that there's more available there for others to call in. So it shifts a little bit, for me at least, what I mean by like creating and where are we surrendering our energies to. And my feeling is that there's more than room for all of that.
Can you give that question again, like that? Can you just articulate that shift again? So,
yeah. So the shift being, like, my way of orienting was being co-creative means solving real, tangible problems, and that's the. If it doesn't do that, then you're not really being helpful. And I'm loosening on that as I'm doing more reading and more sitting. And feeling into, well, what about the folks who we don't even know about, who are living in a cloister, like monks, living in a cloister, surrendering themselves in a different way, meaning surrendering themselves into total emptiness, into total surrender to love, so that there's more knitting together happening in the unseen world. That does have implications in the seen world because they're not disconnected. So in our left brain oriented world that McGilchrist talks a lot about, we haven't even brought his name into any of this, which is unfortunate because there's so much he brings. What is it to think more right brain around this whole thing of creativity and becoming and open up more? So that's, I don't know if I answered your question. I probably just said the same thing.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of the Eastern Orthodox monks, you know, Mount Athos monks who, you know, are never go out and, you know, and pray basically all day for humanity, for life. So, yeah, you know, I like that idea. And interestingly, I'm thinking of my own life where the journey I went on. So I remember, you know, I got into meditation and spiritual practice, but quite quickly I felt like I don't want to renounce the world and, you know, kind of live in a monastery. Actually, I want to live in the world as a human being. And I'm not saying these monks are not that, but there was that, but then there's the journey of like, what is it to actually live in the world and serve the world, you know, and the realization that many of the things that I tried or held when I was younger, you know, were actually didn't have the impact I wanted or misaligned in some way. So there's a kind of growing, kind of deepening maturity around, well, first of all, humility as opposed to hubris, you know, mm-hmm. and not saving things, but
totally.
Also a kind of, you know, maybe we could Wu Wei, kind of like, what is it to kind of, you know, to have action which feels, has the right touch, you know, and it's kind of just aligned and without making that precious and getting caught in again another game. So yeah, I'm in that journey. I guess what I'm, you know, through my rambling right now, I'm trying to say is I'm in that inquiry myself, you know, because I think I've also spiritually bypassed, you know, and kind of said, well, you know, it's really about all about the kind of contemplative or the beyond realms, but actually is that going to change the world? So yeah, it's an ongoing inquiry.
Yeah. Well, and in some ways, the loosening of our own internal dynamics, our own internal clinging, loosens things for everyone. So there's that cause or that quantum physics aspect of, as we work with our own internal thoughts and attachments and whatever, and lean ourselves more into becoming love, then that internal movement and motion isn't just for us, it's for everyone. As we're learning, there's nothing separate.
Yeah. Yeah. And when what I liked when I read your paper that you sent was this sense of that we're participating in life and in a sense, like we are consciousness experiencing itself in life. Maybe you were referring, or maybe that was Bernadette Roberts's quote, but the whole approach for me creates a sense of more freedom and ease around the work we do, that, you know, easing that tension we can feel around getting to a destination, getting to the right place, you know, uncovering the essence, chipping away at the block, you know, and it kind of brings love in. It's like love is here everywhere right now in this, in the imperfection of this, you know. So that liberates something for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So all those things, and I think, you know, I'm so glad you named all that. What's been helpful also is to recognize, and I participate. So it's also not, oh, well, whatever. Let's just let it all do whatever it's going to do. Like, well, I have my agency matters. And it doesn't matter at the same time. But meaning, what is it to have, like, you know, the Buddhist phrase of what is it to be in action without effort? So I think what can get released is the effort, but it doesn't mean the action doesn't matter.
What if we just, the last few minutes of our conversation, if we just kind of, what would you say if I said, how would you invite coaches to play with this in their practice? And I get, you know, there's no cookie cutter kind of approach here, but yeah, what could people do to play with this in the way they coach?
A generous question. My feel for that would be maybe where we started, which is what can the client call in to help them create what they feel would be helpful, in addition to like rubbing out or dissolving or loosening a pattern. So that would be one. The other way of maybe saying the same thing is, what is it to invite the client into active creative participation, and what limits their creative participation? Like what internal attachment or thing that they're after limits their creative participation? And then maybe the last thing would be, empty and call in, empty and call in, empty and call in as coaches, as clients, as people. So empty and make room for more love to come in. You know, we didn't get into this part, but the way that which, as I empty, I make room for everyone else to come forward more. So what is it as a coach to empty so that the client can come forward more?
Emptying, I'm imagining, is a phenomenological move we can make in the moment. So how do you do that? How do you empty out?
I mostly ask for mercy that it happens. Seriously. Like, oh, there's this thing. That's not helpful. Help me let go of that.
And who are you saying that to?
Well, in my tradition, it would be God, but it could be emptiness, it could be love, it could be the mystery, it could be presence.
Yeah.
But the energetic field that we're intimately connected to that can be of great support when we're in active relationship with it, and that could be a whole other conversation, active relationship with this energetic field.
Well, this, I think, is fascinating because I also have started to notice this, you know, what is it to ask for support in a session?
Yeah.
I've been doing that, you know, so may I take my hands off the wheel, support me to serve this person. even, hey, support what's best for the both of us in this, you know, and that starts to, you know, I've had to contemplate.
What's it like for you?
Well, it's a very powerful practice because it's more the energy. So it's like prayer, you know, prayer's become very important to me. Mm-hmm. And it's a prayer for me is a practice of attunement. Mostly it's a non-dual practice. It's not like I'm asking for stuff to happen. Although, you know, I am kind of orienting, you know, it's what you said, like, I'm like, may I be, you know, Lord, help me,
mm-hmm.
Be a vehicle of light, be a, you know, a lighthouse in these times. And, it's a very intimate thing. And so, and what I'm trying to say with prayer is that it's a feeling, you know, that you feel it and it amplifies, and it's an attunement. And I think it's the same in my processions. And but I felt also like, well, you know, where's the ethics? You know, what's the ethics around praying for my client? You know, I mean, I don't pray for them per se, but I'm kind of praying in the moment. And so I'm working with that. But if, you know, people like Peter Hawkins, you know, also said, you know, you get to the edge and then you can pray, you know, pray for something to come through. So even people like Peter Hawkins, who's, you know,
yeah, lovely
academic in the field and also a deep practitioner, yeah, I might add. But so, yeah, there is a felt sense of this force of life that can come through.
Yeah. And that's fundamentally, like, you know, as you're talking about it, one of the things that I really appreciate about what Cynthia Bourgeau says about, like, surrender and kenosis, she says it's fundamentally about intention and posture. So to your question of, like, how do we do that? I think it's continuing to work with the way that we have some form of agency over our will and posture. And that alone is immensely powerful. So to your question about, like, how can we practice this? Like, what is it to have our will be in an orientation and an intention of surrendering to, let's use love. And then it doesn't mean, though, that we don't work with becoming skillful. Like you said earlier, this isn't a bypass of letting go of everything else. It's a including, but not being limited by.
Well, then just like my last question then is, you know, again, I'm coming back to creative participation, but you said, you know, I asked, what could you do to bring this into your coaching? And you said, mm-hmm. you know, invite your client into creative participation. What does that look like? What does that mean?
To invite the client into creative participation?
I think that's how you phrased it. You know, you kind of said, yeah, like what? Because they might be like, or people listening might be like, well, they are participating in the conversation, in the exploration.
Yeah, okay, so that's helpful. So for me, when I say creative participation, it's not just in a particular outcome of, like, I want to create, like, some shift, A, B, you know, I want more revenue or my team to get things done on time. But creative participation in terms of, like, what kind of mood, what kind of energetic field, what kind of movement or motion do you want to be present? And how do you creatively participate with that? So then it becomes about accessing more than just our, like, intellect in terms of how we creatively participate. It comes down to, what's the energy I'm bringing to this, and how is that participating in whatever we're creating together here? Drawing on, like, what emotions am I really in contact with, and how are they contributing to what's getting created here? So it's accessing, like, the different dimensions of who we are as a person, as we understand ourselves, and seeing those as ingredients that's creating something. So it could be working with the client and understanding, what are the various things that you have available to you that are the ingredients you're using to create? And let's work with those emotionally, somatically, energetically, intellectually, and so on. So then the palette of creativity is very vast. And then the key one is this last one of like, and what, how is your will, or how is your like move to engage? What's the intention there? And how is that ingredient contributing to what gets created?
Do you think this is, you know, one of the things I've been feeling is like our work as AI comes in as well is going to deepen more into, in a sense, like frequency, you know? So mood, you know, emotional awareness, mood, but even the kind of sense of state, the state we're in, the frequency that we're accessing, and the sense of possibility that's enacted through that frequency. Does that kind of align with what you're saying there?
Yeah, I would include frequency. Like, what's the, you know, the word I would probably use is like, what's the energetic move here? What's the energy here? But that could be connected to frequency. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think what AI is leaning toward, and I think I've heard others talk about this, is highlighting that our cognitive mind is really not what's going on here. And that's not what's happening in coaching. There's so much more in the mix. And yay, AI is going to help illuminate that, I think, faster than ever.
Yeah.
Like, for example, AI, the way AI thinks isn't conditioned by the temperature of the room, but the way I think is conditioned by the temperature of the room, because we're more than the mind, more than just this like central processing unit. When I say mind, I mean it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, I mean, this is a, I mean, we can't open up this topic too much, but I think AI will have us reflect ever more deeply what it truly means to be human. And I think will move us out of the era we've been in where we kind of really privileged knowledge. And it's not to say knowledge isn't important. We won't.
No.
You know, yeah. But it's that, well, that domain will start to be handled by AI. So what's left over? Well, it's all the stuff we're talking about. And, you know, I've been watching videos of Yann LeCun. I think that's his name, how you pronounce it. And there's a article by the Chinese, the new, you know, the Chinese guy who left the US to China. And they have very different views on, will large language models reach human level intelligence because of what you're pointing to? They're like, it just doesn't have the, it's not built on the same, you know, human intelligence is not just rational knowledge in the brain, you know? So anyway, and I'm also aware I'm out of my depth in terms of my expertise, but this has been cool, Adam. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing about this. And, you know, what excites me about it is that, you know, I see this being, you know, I love how the field is maturing and unfolding, and there's new articulations of the field of what it means to be human and to keep, you know, I mean, that unfolding is a problematic word in this conversation because we've been contrasting becoming, you know, so in the field of becoming, you know, becoming who we are. So thank you for being one of those people who's, you know, thinking about this deeply and articulating it. So.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Joel, and you've been so generous and engaging with the conversation. So I've been really appreciative of our time together. And yeah, I love what we're up to, and I hope maybe we all continue to be up to it and ushering more love into this world.
Where can we find out more about your work and this writing,
So the paper I sent you, that, you know, that was a draft, but it'll, by the time this publishes, that'll be ready, so you'll have a way of reading about becoming there. And then, you know, newventureswest.com is a great place to learn more about how we embody this at our school and how we bring it into our programs.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.